everyone, welcome to The Great American Bash. My name is Brandon Weatherby. The Great American Bash is a podcast about the intersections of presidential politics and professional wrestling. Co-host and co-author Chris Kelly and I are experts in the field, considering that we're the authors of the book, The Donald, How Trump Turned Presidential Politics into Pro Wrestling. You could find that and pieces that we've written for places like The Washington Post and Slate, Vice, U.S. News and World Reports, and more at presidentwrestler.com. To listen to the newest episode of The Great American Bash, follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/gabpod, G-A-B-P-O-D. This episode features a chat with Ben Kissel, podcaster, a member of The Last Podcast on the Left, Abe Lincoln's Top Hat, many more. And when we were speaking, he was currently running for Reform Party candidate for Brooklyn Borough President. It was recorded July 21st, 2017. Here's episode 51 of The Great American Bash.
How are you, South Carolina? Finally, the Mac has come back to Greenville. Looks like Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama want to settle their differences in the ring. Well, that's fine with me. But let me tell you, if you want to be the man, you have to beat the man. Come November, it'll be game over. And what you going to do when John McCain and all his McCainiacs run wild on you? You want to pull out of Iraq? Well, I say no surrender. America can win the war against terror. I'm going to introduce Osama bin Laden to the Undertaker. You want to raise taxes? Well, I want a smaller government and bigger individuals. You see, my friends, I believe that America is the greatest nation in the world. And Americans don't watch wrestling because we're bitter. We watch WWE because wrestling is about celebrating our freedom. It's about fighting to be the very best. So, can you smell what the Mac is cooking? Let me give you a little straight talk, WWE fans. You might need a ticket to the Fatal Four next weekend, but you don't need a ticket to the cage match in November. All you have to do is get out there and vote. You decide the champion. You make the difference. And that's the bottom line, because John McCain said so.
You smell what Barack has cooked.
I'm here to challenge you to a match.
When it comes to standing up for the American people, though, I am ready to rumble.
I think that we may need a wrestler in the White House.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Great American Bash. My name is Brandon Weatherby.
My name is Chris Kelly.
It is day, I'll let you say it.
Blink 182.
It's day 182 of President Trump's universal run. I apologize, the Donald's universal championship run. This is a podcast about the intersections of presidential politics and professional wrestling. We are qualified to do this because we wrote a book.
It's called The Donald, How Trump Turned Presidential Politics into Pro Wrestling. It's available on Amazon, ebook, audiobook. You can go to DonaldTrumpsAWrestler.com or PresidentWrestler.com.
One of the things that you've already heard in this episode was Senator John McCain threatening to introduce Osama bin Laden to The Undertaker. That is from the 2008 presidential race. The first time we ever used that was at the Smithsonian American Art Museum. Or no, American History of Art. Mm-hmm. Something like that. Like, it's the one where Dorothy Slippers are at.
The Smithsonian National Museum of American History.
Thank you. So, people seem to forget that John McCain had a very strong, still does in theory, have a very strong plan to deal with terrorists, just introduce him to The Undertaker.
Yeah.
He is not feeling very well right now. We wish him the best. That's not the big show of the week, though. Oh, really quick, one other plug. I was on WGN Radio in primetime. You can listen to that on youmeetheverybody.com. The link is there. Also, for all of our shows, if you want to listen to any back episode, go to the You, Me, Them, Everybody iTunes feed, youmeetheverybody.com. Go to the iTunes feed. It's all there. There's 50-some. This is episode, I think, 50 or 51.
Yeah, we did it for about a year.
For a year. It started at the conventions. God, that was a long time ago. That was exactly a year ago. And the most recent episode and then some of our favorites are on the SoundCloud page. So that's why on the SoundCloud page, you'll only see a few. The rest are available. Moving on to the big show of the week.
And only the SoundCloud wallet still exists because soon it's going to be introduced to The Undertaker. When SoundCloud runs out of money. So it'll be somewhere else eventually.
It's the big show of the week.
Well, it's a big show.
Is that Donald Trump really wants to pardon the investigation. You're welcome.
This is amazing. Okay, we're not going to go into in depth about it because at the same time, last night, Oh yeah, we said what day it is.
We didn't timestamp it. It's Friday, July 21st, 8:34. It's before Trump has tweeted for the day, I believe. Late last night.
The reason why I want to read the CNN article is because it's a good summation of everything that's been going on the past few days, and it's got my favorite subhead since the last time we've done this show.
Go for
it. May I read it? Donald Trump is the no-limit president.
He's a no-limit soldier, baby.
It's amazing.
No limit, the record label that was also a stable in late period WCW.
Thank you. That's why I wanted to bring that up. So I'm just going to read one paragraph here that kind of explains what's going on, and Chris is going to do his best not to giggle. Is that fair?
Sure.
Okay. The Washington Post and The Times ran stories Thursday night suggesting Trump's lawyers are working on ways to undercut the probe by special counsel Robert Mueller into whether any of the president's campaign aides colluded in Russian election meddling. The two papers reported that Trump's legal team is examining potential conflicts of interest in Mueller's outfit and what appears to be evolving into an unavoidable showdown between the White House and the special counsel.
Excellent. And it's going to be at SummerSlam on August 21st in Brooklyn at the Barclays.
Oh, do you think that this has to still be going on by SummerSlam?
Oh, yeah. No, it's not.
This specific feud, Mueller.
Yes. Okay. Because I don't think they're going to find. So basically, the reports that came out is that they're looking for any way to sabotage this Mueller investigation, because now the Mueller investigation is going after his finances, reportedly. And he did a couple of days ago an interview. The president did an interview at the New York Times where he was like, that'd be the red line where I'd fire him if he went after my finances, which is like, you just told him where to look, you dumbass. Which, by the way, because I think this stuff moves so fast and people kind of, you know, the headlines, but it's funny. The Mueller is only there because he fired Comey. That was the whole cause of having a special investigator. So he entirely brought this on himself. Comey probably would have looked and would have seen what everyone's seeing. Yes, his kid met with some Russians. Yeah, it's kind of shady, the timeline. But Trump never, like, was in the room that we know of. And so there's probably not going to be a smoking gun. We've been waiting all this time for a smoking gun. There hasn't been one. But because he couldn't control himself, he fired Comey. He's got a guy sniffing around. I mean, Whitewater turned into the Clinton impeachment. Okay, so like, they're looking for things. One of my favorite conflicts they're looking at is that Mueller left Trump's golf course, and they're saying that's a conflict of interest because they had a dispute over the fees, and they actually had to get like Mueller's spokesperson to be like, no, that's not the reason he's investigating his finances. Like, the guy who's a very serious communications professional had to answer that stupid question.
I think it's brilliant, and I think that the Donald is going to be great in this feud, and I think this feud won't be as good as the media feud because Mueller won't give him anything back.
Yeah, no, he's just doing his job.
And we've seen one-sided feuds, but Mueller's the Brock Lesnar to every, and Trump is every opponent that's ever faced Brock Lesnar. What can we do with this monster?
Yeah.
He's going to no-sell us.
Going to no-sell your offense and squash you in 7 minutes. But yeah, we'll see. Do you think he will make a move on him? He's already made hinted that he'll make a move on Sessions, and Sessions is staying strong. He's like, I have a lot of good work here to do to criminalize being black. I'm not going to just take this lying down.
That's actually a good transition to something that we were going to talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
In that New York Times long interview, the talking smack of interviews, because it didn't need to exist, and it was brilliant for all the wrong reasons.
Breaking kayfabe all over the place.
He is very upset with his longest and earliest supporter, Jeff Sessions.
He's like, if I knew he was going to recuse himself from this huge black cloud, I wouldn't have appointed him.
So that's a big deal, because Donald Trump does not win without the support of Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions made him tenable to a lot of the South, to a lot of potential voters that became supporters. That's very interesting that he's already 6 months in, Blink 182 days in, already been like, this guy, enough of you.
Enough of this shit.
Man Overboard, am I right? Blink 182 reference right there. That's their best song, by the way, Man Overboard. Do you know what that's from?
I like Adam's song.
Oh, you like the sad one? You like the sad song about smelling apple
peace,
juice?
Linkin Park, okay?
All right. We're not...
This is a pop culture and politics and professional wrestling podcast.
The first thing I did as soon as Chester Bennington died was to make sure that he was the guy that also was in Stone Temple Pilots.
Yes.
And he was.
Well, I'm doing good work out here.
And the second thing I did was to see if there was any Linkin Park songs that were WWE themes.
There wasn't?
I didn't find any, but I found a bunch of tribute videos of CM Punk.
Set to Linkin Park.
Set to Linkin Park.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I'm thinking that maybe it was used for that.
Yeah, no, that sounds about right. I'm sure there must be a connection. They're not on Forcible Entry, WWF Forcible Entry, a CD named after rape. But they were a little after
later.
That. Oof, that's rough. So that's the current state of the Rust investigation, which has been our big show pretty much on and off for months now.
We had a little debate about whether that should be the big show or healthcare should be the big show. But right. Since we have music for both, what's going on with healthcare?
Healthcare is working along very well. We could have a big surprise with a great healthcare package. So now they're happy.
What do you mean by big surprise, sir?
I think you're going to have a great, great surprise. It's going to be great.
Oh, my God! It's Braun Strowman! The monster among men is back!
They told us he'd be out 6 months.
You've seen the forgotten. I'm not finished with you!
So healthcare failed again for now.
For now. Okay, so...
It is The Undertaker. We'll be back, okay?
Like, we were supposed to record on Wednesday morning. I said, wait, let's push this back. Let's see what happens. It's the middle of the week.
Yeah.
We push it back one more day. We're like... And then one more day, it's like, there's going to be no vote. We can never use this brilliant Braun Strowman clip. Yeah. And now, Friday morning, we can use it again. Because there is going to be a vote, maybe, sort of, kind of.
Right. They might do a vote. Last I saw, Rand Paul will vote for a motion to proceed if he gets his vote up front of, like, just repeal the whole thing and see what happens.
So it's looking like there's not going to be a replacement.
No, there is no replacement.
But there might be a repeal vote. But it looks like the numbers don't line up to make that happen.
Because elections, getting reelected... If you've taken politics 101, getting reelected is the only thing that matters. And this will, if they vote no on this, it'll very much hurt the chances of the senators from Nevada, West Virginia, Maine, a lot of places.
Usually, mm-hmm. The president doesn't threaten to take away party support if they don't vote for something.
Not
at least
on
publicly.
TV, yeah. Lyndon Johnson would beg to differ.
I don't think we should leave town unless we have a health insurance plan, unless we can give our people great health care. Because we're close. We're very close. The other night, I was very surprised when I heard a couple of my friends, they really were and are. They might not be very much longer, but that's okay. I think I have to get them back. That's right. I refuse. Well, no, you didn't go out there. This was the one we were worried about. You weren't there, but you're going to be. Look, he wants to remain a senator, doesn't he? Okay. And I think the people of your state, which I know very well, I think they're going to appreciate what you hopefully will do. Any senator who votes against starting debate is really telling America that you're fine with Obamacare. But being fine with Obamacare isn't an option for another reason, because it's gone.
So that's why there might be another vote.
Yes.
And the reason why we mentioned the time is Trump still hasn't tweeted. Most of our healthcare updates have become an early morning tweets.
Yeah, via Twitter, as all the things happen. And the healthcare battle is important. I wanted to pivot to this article that I put on our Facebook page, and I liked it, and I've never recommended a piece on nationalreview.com.
It's a lie.
What?
We recommended the Rocks piece. That was in the National Review.
Oh, Jesus. Twice. You see what you're doing to me? More and more Trump supporters celebrate his character flaws by Ben Shapiro. This is from July 19th. Basically, the premise of the article is that, you know, there was people thought was a small minority of people who are like, we just like him because he's this character. He's a buffoon. He's a heel. Is actually most people on that side and most people in his base, because it was before seen as a means to an end. And now it's ends in itself. Because they're not getting anything done. It was before, it was, well, he's a heel, but we're not going to have Hillary, and we're going to get all this stuff done. And they really have only gotten one thing done, which I would say would be Gorsuch. And the travel ban, kind of, because the Supreme Court this week, we should mention, is allowing it with some exceptions. So that was a minor victory. But there's a good quote in here. During the campaign, conservatives said they were embracing Donald Trump despite his character. They were willing to overlook his flaws in order to achieve policy victories. Yes, he was a vulgar bore, a charlatan, a comic buffoon wandering the landscape, stepping on political landmines. He fought, and even if he didn't fight smart, he was willing to hit anyone with a glass face at any time, much like Mike Kanellis did to Sami Zayn on SmackDown, as you all know.
I would like to point out that the line about Mike Kanellis and SmackDown was not in the original text. You just made it better.
Yeah, it was the National Review of SmackDown. It's .com. So basically the fact that this idea that we've been looking for, and we talked about it, I think, last week, of what would be X-Buck heat for Trump and his base, and there is none. There is no base. There's no like bottom of what he could do. I mean, even if it comes out that now the collusion line is basically, yeah, of course we colluded. What are we, marks? Like, we colluded. You would too. You know, it's like, yeah, just poke him in the eye. It's just saying, yeah, I'm a heel, and admit it's like, what, you know.
It's the Jesse Ventura line.
Yeah, just
win, lose, but always cheat.
Yes, and that is now mainstream politics. So there we go.
It's time to talk about the wall.
We are going to build a great border wall to stop illegal immigration.
Man, you love these music cues. You have to put them all in, so have fun. Breaking kayfabe on how podcasts work, guys.
This is from the AP. The House will vote next week in a smaller bundle of government spending bills focusing on national security, which includes funding for President Trump's planned wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. There you go.
Yeah. Did we talk about how he was like, I think we talked about this last week, where he's like, when you throw drugs over it, it's going to land on someone.
I don't think we did talk about this.
That's amazing. It's a thing that the president said. I don't know where to go from here. I would say let's...
I just want to throw the numbers out really quick.
Yeah.
I'm not saying this is technically a bipartisan politics.
Sure. Podcast.
There's a few numbers in here that I'm just almost jaw-dropping to me. Mm-hmm. So just here's some numbers. The funding for the physical barrier construction along the southern border meets the White House 2018 request at $1.57 billion, which includes $784 million for 32 miles of new border fence in the Rio Grande, $498 million for 28 miles of a new levee in that region, $251 million for 14 miles of secondary fencing in San Diego, and $38 million for program planning and development. That's a lot of money for not a lot of miles, guys.
Yeah. Go look at a map or a globe, and that's a long border. That's only like 100 miles of it.
That's like San Francisco real estate prices crazy.
Yeah,
in terms of square feet and yeah, how much money you get. That's it. Okay.
Yeah, but because this presidency, above all, is a grift, that money's going to contractors. What do you think infrastructure means?
Oh,
he draws. Yeah, and like we said, this is bipartisan, so let's check in on the Democrats. This comes from Jeff Stein at Vox. A member of Congress told me Democrats' big 2018 slogan, which is set to be released Monday, is better skills, better jobs, better wages. Or as I saw someone joke, Papa John's, because that definitely sounds like the Papa John's slogan. Or as I was saying, better get used to a GOP Congress, because that's the worst slogan. They clearly, Dem leadership is not listening to this podcast. They don't know that their slogan should be like fuck that guy.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't even have to be fuck that guy. We both agree that the answer is fight. This has come up a lot in my recent interviews with other members of the media. I don't know if you've written a lot about this, but to win against a wrestler, you don't actually have to act like a wrestler. Mm-hmm. You need to talk like a wrestler. And what does that mean? I'm going to stand for something. I'm going to fight for you and make it look like a physical battle.
Yeah.
That's it.
I have written about when there was the leadership battle, short-lived, when Tim Ryan went after Pelosi and got squashed. He was saying, yeah, if Trump comes after us, we're going to have a Youngstown street fight.
That's simple.
Yeah.
No one actually thought.
The closest thing
Tim Ryan was like going to fight someone in the street. Yeah, No one thought that.
Not even a backlot brawl. But yeah, Tom Perez, the closest we've had is, yeah, the head of the DNC has said, you know, we're going to treat Mitch McConnell like they treated, you know, treat them like they treat Obama, and we're going to hit him with a 2x4. So it's the closest thing, but it's clearly not permeating to the campaign strategies, to congressional strategy, that type of language that says we're going to fight, we're actually going to fight you on your level, which is on TV and on promos. So that's Democrats, so that's fun. Not a Democrat, Kid Rock, the featured performer of WrestleMania 25, running for the U.S. Senate in Michigan. People were saying this is outrageous. People are dumb because Donald Trump is the president, and people are still worried about Kid Rock going to be a senator because that's what's going to happen.
I don't know if it'll happen.
I'm thinking Democrats in Michigan has been like the most like hollow.
Not disagreeing. I'm just thinking if Kid Rock could win, and this sounds silly, He has isolated the entire Juggalo community.
How?
They feuded.
Oh.
Kid Rock and ICP feuded. That means something.
I think at the convention, he can get Shaggy, Too Dope, and Violent J. Oh, I nailed it. Didn't think I was going to land that one. I think he's going to offer $20 tickets to the front row of his...
Which he did. Yeah, that's why you're mentioning that. That's actually a really smart policy plan.
Yeah, $20. Everyone gets in. I think Democrats in Michigan's like the most hollow victories they've had of like it really is just on fumes at this point. Of remember when we had unions? So, I mean, I don't see how Kid Rock doesn't win. And that photo that he was launched with was awesome. Like with just like the most Kid Rock running as a Republican for Senate thing I can imagine. So rooting for Kid Rock. That WrestleMania, that's the one
WrestleMania 25.
He's playing a medley of his hits.
It's so long.
The 25 divas in the Diva Battle Royale. This is before Stephanie McMahon started the Women's Revolution. And we had 25 divas with no introduction, no one on the mic going, Nikki Bella. And they all walked to the ring, and they had a battle royale, and then a man dressed as a woman run. So,
perfect. It was meant to be.
I'm with her. Okay, it was great. It was a real women's march. So, do you have anything before we talk about wrestling?
That was wrestling.
No, I mean like that's Senate. Don't get confused. This week in wrestling, a big loss. Like the worst news I got this week.
Oh, for sure.
It was the fact that Talking Smack is dead. Or basically, it's on live support. It might be the post show of the upcoming pay per view Battleground, with your host Jerry the King Lawler. So Vince hears your complaints and does not care about them. But yeah, Talking Smack, one of our favorite.
The main reason we do this show.
Yes, Talking Smack, a talk show on the network about SmackDown that consistently broke kayfabe, but also made the character stronger somehow. It's where we found out that AJ Styles flirts with the
flat earth.
Yeah.
We found out that Shane McMahon is probably an alcoholic.
Possibly the reason the show got canceled is his father seeing that.
We found out that Kevin Owens is great at all times.
Yes.
We found out that the Miz-Daniel Bryan feud is the feud that needed to happen that no one knew needed to happen.
Yeah, the Usos can freestyle.
But the Usos could play good guys on Talking Smack and bad guys on SmackDown.
Yeah.
Literally everyone that appeared on this show benefited.
Yeah.
Even Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah.
Because he exposed that Dolph Ziggler is about to leave to go to New Japan.
Yeah. Everybody. No, it was.
We learned that Dolph is a real creep sometimes to Renee, who's a married woman.
Keeps bringing up her marriage, trying to. Ugh, that was gross. But yeah, so Talking Smack is done. I'm going to keep giving this stupid company $9.99 a month.
Sami Zayn keeps referencing the current administration without saying anything about it.
Speaking of that, former host of Talking Smack, Daniel Bryan, tweeted about the climate scientist who's whistleblowing on the government, and that's being speculated as that he really wants out of his contract.
Yeah.
And he's like continually talking about, I'm going to wrestle again.
Yeah.
Wasn't doing it. So now he's coming for them where it matters, and that's in politics.
Do you think there could be a New Japan pro wrestling talking American wrestling?
Talking American. That sounds horrible. But yeah, so there will be a ghost of its former self Talking Smack after Battleground this Sunday.
Speaking of a ghost of his former self, no matter the bump, Shane's dad will never love him. He fell out of a helicopter.
Did he fall out of a helicopter?
The helicopter crashed.
The best reference of this I saw was that, you know who Max Landis is.
Yeah.
For the listener, Max Landis, son of John Landis, interest of this show because he did a video called Wrestling Isn't Wrestling. He at one point was actually employed by the WWE semi-recently. As a writer, and they were saying that he booked Shane's helicopter accident to emulate his own father. Who do you know about this? Do you know the movie Twilight Zone? So in the movie Twilight Zone, in the scene where the racist is in Vietnam and he's Vietnamese, Vic Morrow and two small children were decapitated by a helicopter, and that was a John Landis feature presentation. Yeah, you didn't know that? That really happened. Vic Morrow. The joke after that happened was, what kind of shampoo does Vic Morrow use? Shoulders. Shoulders. That's a dad joke. So anyway, that was a really good tangent I went on. Battleground is this Sunday. What did you call it earlier?
Backlash?
No, the thing about like jingoism.
Oh, jingoism in 2017.
Yes, because we have a Punjabi prison match Oof, that's really bad that that exists. Only because I don't want to see Jinder and Randy Orton fight again.
Well, you don't have to because it's a Punjabi prison, so it's impossible to watch it.
Why?
Because there's...
Oh, because it's like
it's
eight
It's literally
cages.
Very difficult to see in the ring.
Yes. There is also a flag match between John Cena and the Bulgarian brute Rusev.
So there hasn't been a Punjabi prison match in, I think, a decade.
Yeah, because they used to do it with Great Khali.
There hasn't been like a flag match in, I think, a decade.
Yeah. My favorite, as always, Rusev is the best. Man down, flag down, nation finished. Hashtag battleground. He also took credit for Shane's... Rusev's a great follow.
Helicopter crash.
When you don't respond to my video messages, you land in the ocean, Shane McMahon. Hashtag karma, which he spelled wrong. But, you know, it's good stuff. Also, we have and Kevin Owens and AJ Styles fighting to be the face of America.
I love it.
Yeah.
The only good thing about Kevin Owens no longer being the face of America is his Face of America t-shirts will be on sale in the WWE shop a little bit sooner.
Yeah.
Two things that we need to mention every time we talk about Rusev and or Jinder Mahal. Rusev lives in Nashville and loves it and followed along with the Nashville Predators' entire Stanley Cup run.
Yeah.
We clearly the most one of the most American cities, one of the most beloved, definitely the most beloved American hockey team,
mm-hmm.
and he loves country music.
Yeah, I think when he loses this match, because there's no way John Cena loses the flag match, they're doing this match. They've changed the rules. You not only have to get the flag, but you have to then run up the ramp and put it in a flag holder. It's so they can have Cena STF Rusev with a flag, right? Because there's no reason to do that otherwise. When he loses, I hope he takes some time off and comes back as Big Bartholomew, his character from Southpaw Wrestling, where he embraces his new Nashville home.
I mean, we're both dumb. Why doesn't Rusev just win, but he takes the American flag?
And that's his face turn?
Yeah.
And then Cena can go back to shooting American tough man.
Oh, yeah. We should always mention when there's a 9/11 reference, John Cena compared this match to 9/11.
Look around you through recession, depression, the Dust Bowl, the sit-ins, the marches, the protests, the Cold War. In the end, the flag flew high. When the towers fell... In the end, the flag flew high. This Sunday, what will you remember? Same thing I do. These colors do not run. These colors kick ass.
Speaking of 9/11, this is what the WWE, how they responded to 9/11.
A few years ago, some people tried to destroy my family. They attacked my father's reputation. They attacked my mother's reputation. And they attacked the World Wrestling Federation. They tried to rip us apart, but all they did was make my family stronger. And that's exactly how America feels right now. Because on Tuesday, America was attacked. But America is a united nation. And together, we stand strong. I am incredibly proud to be an American citizen. And I will stand up for my rights and my freedom.
We're going to play that Stephanie McMahon clip until the end of this show. Jinder Mahal's from Canada. We need to make that clear. Okay, now moving on.
So I had a discussion with a person in a bar who was concerned about kind of wrestling being the worst and the jingoism and like, is this the people watching this getting that it's a work? And she was disturbed by how gross wrestling can be. And I said, well, the audience gets it. And of course, there's always going to be some people who are rooting for the wrong things. But generally, it's the wrestling audience is, I would say, a microcosm of America. Same microcosm you'd see at a sporting event, if not more diverse, depending on the sport. And everybody knows and has known for 100 years that wrestling's fake. Any fans that hasn't been shot. Well, not small children, but anyone there who's...
We never talked about this. When did you realize it wasn't real?
My dad told me like immediately.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, he was like, that's fucking
There's
fake.
Been a few things where I've been legit freaked out. And I think we've talked about this. Number one, I think anyone who's seen it was probably legit freaked out. The Jake the Snake, Macho Man, when the snake actually bites Macho Man.
Yeah.
regardless of, sure. you know, that's still a snake.
It's
I understand
snake,
that there's no
yeah.
venom. And number two, when Taker and Paul Bearer lock the Undertaker in a casket.
Or the Ultimate Warrior.
Ultimate Warrior, what did I say?
Undertaker.
Undertaker locked
Could
Undertaker.
Could have been the Underfaker.
That's right. So when Warrior was locked in a casket and the announcers were so good at selling, they said, there's only so much time before there's brain damage.
Yeah.
And then they screwed in holes to the casket.
And it was too late. The brain damage already taken hold in the Ultimate Warrior.
And based on how everything ended up, I think it was real.
Yeah, that was a shoot. So basically I was arguing that everyone knows to cheer for John Cena against Rusev because that's what you do. We're not, you know, we cheer for Orton, I guess, against the Jinder who's fighting for the respect because he's Indian. You're not cheering against him because he's brown. And sure, there are a small amount of people there. There are, like, in the closest analogy to wrestling in pop culture right now, Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor. Yes, there are people rooting for Conor and against Floyd because Conor's white and Floyd is black. But there's plenty of, that's not everybody, because there's plenty of reasons to root against Floyd Mayweather. He's 49-0 against men and 10-0 against women. He's a wife beater, domestic abuser, and Conor McGregor's a better promo. So there's people get it. People get what they're not always. This is like that liberal bubble thing of like, I don't think people get Trump. They don't really get it. They don't get the joke. They don't get he's just being healed. No, they get it. They like it. That's it. You have to stop condescending. And that's the part more so than like, oh, we have to listen to the white working class. It's like, no, just stop condescending, because that's the part that's not working.
I know I'm going into business for myself, but in the WGN interview I just did, mm-hmm. that was one of the things that I kept repeating over and over again. Just because you like wrestling, or just because you understand wrestling, doesn't necessarily make you dumb. If anything, Trump is smarter than anyone gives him credit for, because mm-hmm. he understands basic storytelling. And I keep bringing up this analogy. You know, Star Wars isn't original, right? Mm-hmm. You also know Star Wars isn't real, right? Star Wars is not, it's just The Last Samurai. It's the same hero's journey as yeah. in every great movie. When we also know it was made up to tell a bigger tale. What is Donald Trump doing? He doesn't actually believe these things. They're just stories that he tells you, like storytelling, and he's good at it. Respect him. He deserves that respect. You don't have to like any of it. You could hate it. That's perfectly fine. But people need to understand that, and they think they don't. I think they never yeah. will, because when you use the wrestling as an analogy, it's like, oh, you're an idiot. Yeah, but he's also a billionaire. Vince is a billionaire.
Oh, Vince is, not Trump. But
no,
Vince.
I never would say Trump is. I'm not crazy. Yeah. But for all intents and purposes, the battle of the billionaires worked because it's made up. It's storytelling. It's brilliant. Yeah. Anyways.
Speaking of storytelling, the one thing from the week of wrestling that I forgot, that's how important it was the fact that Kurt Angle finally revealed his big secret. And it wasn't Stephanie McMahon. So immediately I was like, well, this is going to be great no matter what it is. And it's that he loves his black son, Jason Jordan. Jason Jordan, half of American Alpha, who we saw booed at, or at least not cheered at the tribute to the troops.
That was so great.
He, an Olympic class wrestler who's, I think Vince sees money when he sees the guy. And he's now been revealed as the kayfabe son of Kurt Angle. Going to get a big push. And it's sad to see American Alpha broken up, but it's good to see him get a push. What do you think of that segment and that storyline?
One of the highest rated Raws. Pretty much universal acclaim mm-hmm. for the storytelling. No one seems to be upset that it's a white father and a black son.
Yes.
Yet, on SmackDown, it's the most jingoistic it's possible, but on Raw we're somehow progressive and cool with it.
Except, and this is only because they didn't know. Here's bad storytelling: is WWE didn't know what that reveal was going to be week to week. They didn't know it till like probably Sunday or Monday. So they had kept the. If you look at it from what was presented on stage is on screen, it's Kurt Angle going, "This is going to ruin me. This is the worst thing ever. This is I'm going to be a disgrace to my family." And it's like when you find the reveal is that he has his son. He had a son with a black woman. It's saying that's the biggest disgrace, but only because they didn't write the storyline until they got there.
Sure. And to me, there's an easy way to explain that through. Mm-hmm. I have a wife and children that I didn't like. Number one, that makes me a bad person. I should have cared
but
about the kid. I understand
that,
but I also don't want to ruin my current marriage.
Sure.
And with my, so I
get
that.
I get it. They were able to kind of get around it, but yeah, it's weird. But yeah, no, it's great. And it's much better than the angles, no pun intended, Kurt was doing in the 2000s, where he kind of date raped Stephanie, which was kind of her thing in the 2000s. And he also, I think there's...
Hold on, for the listener at home, there's a reason he's saying that. Chris, who is Stephanie McMahon currently married to?
Triple H. Paul Levesque.
How did they meet in kayfabe?
He drugged her and then took her to a wedding chapel and then married her.
And then...
Oh, I mean, you
yeah,
consummate.
It was implied.
Oh,
so
I fucked my wife, Your Honor.
So that's why Chris said that. He wasn't just making a weird joke that's not funny.
Sure.
We need to explain certain things that happened 17 years ago in wrestling.
Yeah, no, I know, because it sounds like I'm a real horrible person, and I'm making that argument for that person I was arguing with. One last thing on the road to SummerSlam, because it could be where Brock Lesnar finally drops the belt. Rumors this week that Brock Lesnar's headed back to the UFC to get another payday, potentially, and the kind of weird horse trading the UFC and WWE did to have him go last summer and fight in the UFC, possibly getting Chris Cyborg to do some sort of angle. They've also been really pushing the Ronda Rousey, Shayna Baszler, four horsewoman thing in NXT and the women's tournament. So some more opportunities for the WWE to get on that other sports entertainment product that's real popular right now.
Yeah, real exciting news there.
You know, I just want to close on a high note and not date rape.
Well, speaking of that, Dana White. Dana White spoke at the RNC last year.
Yes.
Like a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. That closes the loop.
There we go. It's all connected, guys. Wake up, sheeple. The truth is not H.
We're going to close the episode with an interview with Ben Kissel. Ben Kissel's an old friend of mine. Ben Kissel did the show maybe 6 years, my other show 6 years ago. He is one of the hosts of Last Podcast on the Left. That is an actually popular podcast that people listen to and is always in the top whatever of iTunes. Not really on a network. It's on a Cave Comedy Network, but not like a giant NPR. It's one of the few organic podcasts that are popular for being a podcast. He also does Abe Lincoln's Top Hat. And one of the reasons why he's on this show is because, yes, he's a wrestling fan. Yes, Last Podcast on the Left did an episode of all about Chris Benoit. If you haven't heard the Laps Fan, Chris's favorite show,
yes.
Very deep dive.
I like it so much more than this show.
Into Chris Benoit. We recommend that. Ben is currently running for Brooklyn Borough President. That's a shoot, brother. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And without further ado, here's our chat with Ben Kissel.
Ben, it is your birthday. You turned 36 years old today. And you've managed to make a career out of doing something that most people aren't able to manage making a career out of. You talk for a living, but it's not for major networks.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, obviously, we do the podcast. You Last Podcast on the Left, Abe Lincoln's Top Hat, Roundtable of Gentlemen. That's how we make a living. We travel all over the world for Last Podcast on the Left. And it's been amazing. It's been an amazing journey. I mean, we were just able to do this full time as a career about a year and a half ago because the fans, the listeners, were so kind to donate to our Patreon page, and then from there it's sort of blown out into a much larger thing. So I feel very fortunate to only be talking for a living because God knows I can't do anything physically.
See, you look like someone that could do something physically. You're a very large man,
it's a
not
lie.
Fat, not an obese.
Yeah,
man.
I'm large. I'm large, I'm tall, I'm 6'7", 200 and, well, I'm going to say 240 pounds, but in reality closer to 300 pounds. But it's my birthday today, so I'm going to be nicer to myself. It's all about the illusion of being able to do things, which I find is extremely beneficial. But in actuality, I like to sit and I like to speak.
So those are both perfect transitions to talk about what this show is about. This show is about the intersections of presidential politics and professional wrestling. You, out of the three members of Last Podcast, probably the biggest fan, I'd say. I think that's fair.
The biggest fan of pro wrestling?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I followed the now WWE ever since I was, 12 years old. I fell off a little bit in the mid-2000s there. I used to do backyard wrestling, and I was an actual wrestler in high school. I got third in state, division like six, I think, so that doesn't really count that much. But I've always been fascinated with pro wrestling, the theatrics of it. You know, they are really just bodybuilders who also love theater and obviously extremely athletic on top of that. and their characters. I've always loved the over-the-top characters that go into professional wrestling. And as Mick Foley, the great Mick Foley, said, professional wrestling in many ways is more real than real life. You know, he equates winning the WWE Championship to winning an Oscar, and that makes a lot of sense. I mean, there is a realness to the entertainment that I think some people don't understand.
You're also running for office, and that is also now, after the 2016 election, that people might understand more as theater.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the optics of running for office, the theater behind running for office is very real. There's actually a great documentary out on iTunes right now called The Reagan Show, and it's all about Ronald Reagan and his ability to use, you know, tricks of cinema in order to make himself look like the person that we view him to be, that sort of grandfatherly figure, that person who is passing out the jelly beans, that individual who is embracing the nation in times of turmoil. But of course, in reality, we had the Iran-Contra scandal. We had a whole series of horrible fiscal decisions made by his administration, certainly amping up the war on drugs, massive incarceration rates that we're still dealing with today. Both the left and the right are complicit in our incarceration, specifically of people of color and individuals of lower income. So the theater of politics in many ways is more significant and more important to the actual policy that these politicians put forward.
And you're currently running for borough president of Brooklyn, and your entire platform relates to what you just mentioned, which are the policies that Reagan enacted in the 80s.
Yeah, I'm currently running for Brooklyn borough president. I'm endorsed by the Reform Party. Criminal justice reform is the cornerstone of the platform. And, of course, that ties into the legalization of recreational marijuana. If you look at what happens when it comes to marijuana arrests, the vast majority, 49%, are African-American. The other 36% are Hispanic. These make up the bulk of marijuana arrests. Obviously, all of my white friends smoke marijuana, but they don't live in the same reality that individuals who are of lower income live. And, of course, if you are a police officer, you have quotas to fill. You have to go where you... basically, you know, they're fishermen who want to go to the pond that have the fish that, you know, that bite the most. So you have a situation where you have officers going, preying on certain communities, and not all officers, of course, but this is just the way the system is set up, either arresting individuals for low-level marijuana offenses, or in some cases, unfortunately, planting marijuana on individuals and then arresting. So it's really a nefarious problem that is a systemic issue, and it's something that I'm focused on when it comes to running for Brooklyn Borough President.
How likely is it that you will receive any major endorsements from anyone from one of the two major political parties?
Well, we don't want the Republican Party endorsement at this point. And, of course, we're running against the Democrat, Eric Adams, who is currently in office. I don't particularly care to have either of the major party endorsements. I believe the two-party system has corrupted our politics in this country to such a degree that we are left with a series of trash candidates. Supposedly we're given options, but the buffet is full of rotten food. So it doesn't matter how many spoiled grapes can one have, meanwhile being told that we're given, a bevy, a cornucopia of fruit to eat, but in reality, it's all spoiled, so who cares? Which is why we have a situation that we have right now on a federal level, on a national level, where Donald Trump was able to run and win the presidency based off the notion that every politician is scum, because at the end of the day, they are. And now we're left with a totally incompetent White House, and the country is in dire straits because of it.
Why do this? Why run? What turned you onto it? Do you think you would be in the race if November 8th ended differently?
Yeah, most likely. I've always wanted to run for office. The opportunity came around this year. I met my campaign manager, Travis Irvine, a few years ago. He's also a comedian. And I worked extensively with Gary Johnson in his campaign in 2016. I really enjoyed the process. I love the process of going out and meeting people all over Brooklyn and, you know, talking to folks and hearing their concerns and hearing their perspective. Brooklyn is 2.4 million people. If it was a city, it would be the fifth largest city in the country. So really the inspiration just came from, you know, wanting to contribute, wanting to learn, and wanting to get across this message of criminal justice reform.
How are you taking what you've learned from becoming essentially a small business owner that's able to sustain a decent lifestyle using your art? How are you using that in the campaign?
Well, you know, one of the luxuries of having thank you for clarifying that. That's one of the misunderstandings in a lot of ways when it comes to what our podcast is. It is a small business, and that's, you know, we're all LLC and all that stuff. One of the luxuries of creating your own schedule as opposed to being beholden to somebody who forces you to clock in at 9 and out at 5 is that we get a little bit more time to create opportunities during the day for ourselves that we otherwise might not have had. So, of course, we're extremely busy, not just with the podcast. I do a lot of talking head work on the television news channels, and I host a radio show on a regular basis on Fox News Talk and on Sirius Channel 450. So we're busy, but with the creating your own schedule, it sort of allows you to go out and be able to hit the streets at times when if you had a day job or traditional employment, you might not be able to do it. So, and then that learning experience of, you know, having a couple of employees that we that are reliant on us for their livelihood, which is, you know, a great responsibility that we don't take lightly, it's really, you know, sheds light on a lot of the processes that go on that someone might not understand if they don't have to, you know, take care of payroll and things like that.
Let's say you win in November. If I'm on your payroll, aren't I going to worry that I'm not going to have a job in 6 months?
Yes, perhaps. Yeah. No, that's not. If I would be elected Brooklyn Borough President, I would maintain the position with the podcast and things like that.
Your podcasts are, well, if anybody knows you, they like you and they're going to vote for you. But the people that are just finding out about you, a lot of the stuff on the podcasts isn't that family friendly. to say that you speak about the worst parts of humanity might be an understatement. It's a lot of stuff about serial killers and conspiracies. It's called The Last Podcast on the Left for a reason. It's not the most wholesome show. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that's fair. I don't feel like we really need to be looking at things in that kind of way. I mean, wholesome or not wholesome, it reveals parts of the human experience that I think are valid and need to be discussed. The backbone of Last Podcast on the Left is all information-based. It's nothing that you wouldn't hear as far as information on some of the more traditional you know, media outlets when it comes to true crime. Although I think we do a great service by defanging the boogeyman, by you know, demonizing, criticizing, and emasculating the serial killer. So I'm not too concerned about this notion that it's not family-friendly. I mean, we're adults. We play in an adult world. And at the end of the day, individuals will have to listen to it, make their minds up. And I think they'll understand the context of the show, the intelligence behind the show. And, you know, if people, you know, don't want to vote for me because of the content of the podcast, that's well within their right. But I think that people are over the, I think people are over this whole culture of silence when it comes to, you know, individuals talking about dark subject matter.
I clearly agree with you on that. I like the dark subject matter. Is that why you think it's doing so well and though it's not on a major network. You're not supported by NPR. You're not just a real radio show that happens to be repackaged as a podcast. You are a podcast first and foremost, and you people know you because of the work you've put in, not because of the connections within the network. Why do you think why do you think your show has latched on to something that others can't figure out?
Well, at this point, we do over 1.5 million listeners a week. We won a Webby, which was an award that I didn't know existed until we won it. We won that because of the people's choice. People like it because the information is all there. It's a smart show. It's a funny show. It's an irreverent show. But at the end of the day, it lets people know who are interested in dark subject matter that they're not alone. They have a community. And this stuff is fascinating. What happens now, you know, mainstream media, the cliche that that is, but I'm using it in a broader sense than just, you know, the news media, has been talking down to people for generations. They treat everyone at such a base level of stupidity that there is no content, there is no there's no respect for their audience. So we respect our audience, we talk up to our audience, we treat our audience with intelligence, we never talk down to them, and that's why people like it.
Let's transition to wrestling, if that's okay. You grew up with it.
Sure.
They definitely don't always respect their audience. Are you still enjoying the product?
Well, you know, it's interesting. When it comes to the WWE, they have their tentacles in everything. Obviously, they steamrolled and bought every competition, the competition that was, you know, closest to them, they bought everything, ECW, WCW, and so on. However, there's more people making a living off of professional wrestling now than ever before, and those people aren't affiliated with the WWE. The great thing about technology is that it's allowed for a much larger direct-to-consumer product to exist and thrive in the economy that we're, you know, in the modern economy. So the WWE, I think, has taken a hit. I think the glory days were 96 to 2000 when you had the Raw is War. You had the feud with WCW Monday Nitro. The competition was so intense because Vince McMahon was scared of losing his business because the WCW was absolutely crushing him. So that competition spurred on the whole Attitude Era, which I think is the greatest time in professional wrestling history. But as a whole, the WWE aside, pro wrestling as a business is doing pretty good, and it's doing well on the independent circuit for people who are actually in wrestling. They're able to make a living for the first time because, again, they got the direct-to-consumer abilities with social media. If you look at like the Hardy Boys, for example, Matt Hardy, his social media presence is huge, and he's been the reason the Hardy Boys have had such a badass comeback is because he always stayed relevant, even when he was doing the lower level promotions. He still managed to, you know, prop himself up and make himself a viable and valid professional wrestler.
Well, kayfabe is dead. Everyone knows everything now. I appreciate it more, but that's changing the way we think of this thing. We're thinking of it more like theater than ever before.
Are you discussing this notion that it's not being perceived as real whatsoever? It's just simply seen as entertainment, or
sort of? Yeah, it's completely different than when it was WCW versus WWF. It felt more real,
right? Yeah, and to some degree it was more real because there was true business ties. There was multi-million dollars, millions and millions and millions of dollars on the line, and lives were at stake in a lot of ways. So in that degree, in a business sense, it certainly was real. And I do agree with you. It is kind of sad. You know, I love the World Wildlife Federation. I'm all about what they're doing. Love wildlife. But my goodness, with the WWF, with the then WWF, lost that legal battle and became the WWE, it was a moment where the curtain was pulled back, and it was this sort of, you know, there was something about the WWE acknowledging that it's entertainment that did sort of feel like a gut punch, because I loved the facade of it being real. But nonetheless, I think that that has sort of subsided at this point. That you know, people are willing to suspend disbelief and buy into the storylines and buy into the characters. But it is more now in the lap of the consumer to sort of put themselves into the fantasy, as opposed to back in the day where the WWF or WCW or ECW would like just pile on the notion that all of it's real and these storylines are, you know, as intense as we hope they to be. The Brian Pillman, Steve Austin feud, for example, was awesome when Austin breaks into Brian Pillman's house. I mean, that stuff you felt like was totally legit. You're like, they better call the police because Steve Austin, I forget, one of those broke, I think Pillman broke into Austin, so I might be having
you were right the first time. It's Austin breaks in.
Yeah.
Pillman, and the episode ends with Pillman shooting. You hear a gunshot, and then the tape just cuts out.
That's it. Exactly. I mean, that was so cool. And, you know, now we have a situation where it's not quite, you don't get that hyper realism that you got back then. But at the same time, you know, they're trying. I mean, obviously, you have like Bray Wyatt, the Wyatt family, the Randy Orton feud happening. They just recently had a fight. Speaking of home, they just recently had a fight in Bray Wyatt's home. You know, it does. It's obviously, you know, much more transparent when it comes to how staged it is. But there's still great athletes in professional wrestling that are putting on a hell of a show every single event. So we shouldn't, you know, look down on the ones who are the performers. But as a whole, professional wrestling, you know, pro wrestling has changed a little bit. And it's kind of unfortunate because I love the time where you really did feel like Bret Hart and the Hart family were, you know, like when they would talk about Stu Hart in the dungeon and all of that stuff, you're like, wow, Bret Hart really hates America. There's no denying it. And all of that stuff was very fun. But you kind of lose that now. However, again, a lot of the athleticism is actually better. I mean, I've watched, the event, the pay-per-view before Extreme Rules, was it Fastlane? Oh, I forget. It was Fastlane. Fastlane had some amazing matches that I thought were, you know, on par with anything that you'd see back in the day. So the content's still there. The context isn't quite as badass as it used to be, but I suppose that's just because, you know, we're just a different generation now, and I think the people who are growing up in this generation who don't remember, you know, the mid to late 90s, early 2000s, they probably think this is the best professional wrestling they've ever seen. And it is, you know, because they weren't around for what I believe to be the best time for pro wrestling.
I'm enjoying it now more than ever because of the curtain is now completely drawn. I think it's so much more fascinating because of it, and you appreciate it at a different level, which brings me...
It is different, yeah.
Which brings me to Trump. So my co-host and I, we wrote a book about how Trump is a wrestler, and we released it with 6 weeks to go in the election thinking, this book has a six-week shelf life. We've got to just push it onto the internet because no one's going to care in 6 weeks because clearly we all know how that's going to end. And we were wrong. But we weren't wrong about the premise. Now, everything he's done since the announcement speech to me, clear heel, equal parts Jesse the Mind / Body Ventura and Ric Flair. He steals from the best. He understands his history. He knows what he's doing. But...
Yeah, and put Vince McMahon in there too.
He's for sure.
Take some of his character.
For sure. But here's the issue. You and I know wrestling is, we know the outcomes, we know it's a work. And we appreciate it and we love it. Oh, I love it. And because of that, you know, it's the semblance of sport, but all the wonderfulness of theater. Now, why do you think that a lot of supporters, when clearly, if I say something that is inherently contradictory, both things cannot be true. That's just how things work. So if you know someone is lying, How are you not able to divorce yourself and appreciate that person as a character rather than a truth teller, rather than a politician that actually has their needs in mind?
Well, I mean, I think that the 2016 election was a battle of who you hate less. And individuals chose to vote for the devil they don't know as opposed to the devil they do. I mean, if you look at recent polls, to answer your question just very quickly here as well, people oftentimes vote for, again, the lesser of two evils, and they demonize the other side and accept the flaws of the side that they support because they feel as if the side that they support has slightly less flaws than the side that they demonize. If you look at the poll numbers that came out this week with Bloomberg, for example, Bloomberg did a poll where Hillary Clinton was at 39% of approval ratings. Granted, she's not president, so it's a relatively moot and worthless point. And then Fox News did a poll where Donald Trump was at 41% approval ratings. Of course, he's only 6 months into his presidency, and 41% approval rating would be something that you would expect to see out of a president in the waning days of their second term when fatigue sits in and they're dealing with the ramifications and mistakes of their actions. So it was a special time, 2016, when it came to, again, as I mentioned earlier, a buffet full of rotten food to choose from. So basically, you just kind of choose what kind of food poison you wanted. And the American people saw a glimmer of hope in Donald Trump. And he was able to succeed because he was the one speaking to individuals in this country that felt disenfranchised or spoken down to or forgotten about. I mean, Hillary Clinton is the reason that Hillary Clinton lost the election. It's not the Russians. Of course, the collusion scandal is very fascinating. It's not going away anytime soon, and I think relevant. If Hillary was elected, CNN would look like Fox News and vice versa with the Saudi ties and other things like that when it comes to the Clinton Foundation. At the end of the day, she didn't go to Wisconsin. She didn't go to Michigan. She didn't go to West Virginia. She didn't go to North Carolina. It was a sloppy campaign that focused on the coast. We have an electoral college. She knew that. She did run a general election campaign. She ran a popular vote campaign. And without, with full knowledge of the structure of how people run for office in this country. And at the end of the day, people were willing to accept the fact that Donald Trump was a showman, was a theatrical, it was a theatrical performance, to say the least. And they said, well, forget about it. Who cares? We're going to vote for this guy, despite all of his flaws, because we're willing to, you know, roll the dice and take a chance, as opposed to knowing what would happen with Hillary Clinton. And of course, if Hillary Clinton was in office, scandals would be everywhere, and the American people would still be upset, and you know, it would be what it is. So people just—they're so fed up with the electoral process. They're so fed up with career politicians that a total huckster like Donald Trump was able to win. I mean, it's the fault of the political establishment. It's the fault of the Clintons for purging the Democratic Party the past 30 years. It's the fault of the DNC that they allowed a liar, a showboat, and a total and utter scam artist like Donald Trump to win the presidency.
But, we should appreciate a good talker, and he's good on the mic. He's good on the stage.
He is a good – yeah, he is. I mean, if he would have stayed in the – I mean, obviously, he's the best. Of course, you know, he has found himself – if we want to get into the weeds of politics, which I always love to do, you know, Donald Trump now has zero allies, right? He just ostracized Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, who I absolutely despise. I think if you look at what he's done when it comes to criminal justice, requesting prosecutors seek the – harshest possible sentences for drug abuse, for drug offenses, and for all offenses in order to fill the prisons that, of course, specifically when it comes to undocumented individuals, Jeff Sessions is filling the private prisons. Private prisons make up roughly 12% of the U.S. prison system. The U.S. government gives them roughly $650 million a year, and the vast majority of individuals that go into the private prison system are undocumented people. That's CoreCivic, GEO Group, both of both institutions of which Jeff Sessions has in his economic portfolio, and both institutions are slave labor. They are plantations. It is not African Americans on those plantations. It tends to be Hispanic individuals with zero constitutional rights because, again, they are undocumented. If we see what's happening right now in this country, by the time January to June, there was 40,000 arrests of undocumented individuals that went to the private prison system. At the same time in 2016, there was 34,000 arrests, and they also went to the private prison system. But Barack Obama, remember, he was called deporter-in-chief, would deport these individuals. Jeff Sessions is deporting less but arresting more and sending them to private prisons. What does that tell you? It tells you the plantation, and they're using their work for they are using them as free labor in order to help the corporations that those individuals are making products for, so that they're getting labor on the cheap. So I mean, it is a complete and utter sham what's happening right now in this country, and it's a total travesty.
How do you explain that to someone in 10 words? How do you message that in a more concise way, like a wrestler?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure, how to say it like a wrestler. I mean, I would just simply say the prison industrial complex is modern day slavery. And that's really, that is the base that you have to treat it as. And then from there, you can go forward and extrapolate on the reasons why. I mean, more and more people are being affected by the prison industry than ever before. And as more people get affected, specifically at the end of the day, let's be honest, white Americans of wealth, or at least of upper income, middle income, as soon as those individuals start to get affected, you begin to see social change. And of course, that's not an accident, because those people have more connections or potential connections to individuals of power, whether it be city council, PTA boards, things like that. And so that's when you really start to see social change, when the problem blossoms and blooms in a way that now affects not just people of color, specifically African Americans and Hispanics and lower income individuals. As soon as it starts to affect middle-income whites, that's when you start to see social change. It just is the way that it is, for better or for worse. Right now we have a situation, again, where the White House just passed a thing called Kate's Law, which, of course, is in reference to Kate. She was murdered in San Francisco by an undocumented individual who had a criminal record. This law says you get a mandatory 25 years imprisonment for anyone coming over the border for the second time. So now what do we have? We have a person who was arrested, deported. They're trying to come back over the border, and now they're serving 25 years imprisonment before they're deported again. Of course, they don't get to stay here after their time is served. It's an economy. It's a slave economy, and the American people are footing the bill in average of $22,000 per inmate when it comes to these private prisons, and in public prisons, oftentimes much more than that. The American people are footing the bill so that these corporations get slave labor, and at the end of the day, those individuals are just deported after 25 years incarceration. There is no social benefit whatsoever. I also like to point out the fact that Mexico, and when we talk about undocumented people, we're not talking about Canadians or Swedish or Australian people. There's a racial connotation to it. There was 36,000 people in 2016 killed in Mexico, okay? There was 50,000 people. The only other worst country was Syria, with 50,000 people murdered. I believe that individuals, not all of them, of course, they talk about the M13 gangs and these sorts of things. And yes, there are laws on the books that already make those activities illegal. You can't have illegal guns. You can't commit acts of violence. You get incarcerated. Everyone knows that. But what's happening now is I firmly believe there are people fleeing Mexico because of our drug problem, because of our drug, our war on drugs. We've facilitated Mexico as being this country's drug dealer, basically the only economic stable, the only stable economic jobs in Mexico are drug-related. We have individuals who are fleeing Mexico, and I see them as refugees. And I think that's a part of the conversation that is completely not talked about, not discussed, and completely glossed over. Because, you know, people want to focus on the negative. And, of course, there's a lot of negatives. There are some horrible people across the border, but we already have laws that make what they would do here illegal. If they break the laws here, they are already going to be incarcerated. So case law is just another massive government overreach. Jeff Sessions is not a constitutionalist. He's not a small government conservative. He is one of the worst, most racist attorney generals we've ever had in this country.
What's your listener and viewer feedback on this? I'm assuming when it's at Abe Lincoln's Top Hat, it's mostly positive. It's like-minded individuals that are listening to you. But when you're on Fox News, do you get a lot of feedback on your stances? Because you're very open and honest about all this stuff, regardless of platform.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think you can make strong socially, you can make strong fiscal and conservative arguments against the prison industrial complex. Absolutely. I mean, I host Fox News Radio all the time, and I hope both sides are complicit. I mean, the Democrats are just as guilty as the Republicans when it comes to the mass incarceration rates in this country. Let's not look past the 1994 crime bill. Hillary Clinton referring to black super predators. I mean, the 94 crime bill was one of the most atrocious policies ever put forward when it comes to criminal justice in this country. It made Ronald Reagan look like Jimmy Carter. I mean, when Bill Clinton took office in 92, there was roughly 800,000 people in prison. When he left, there was 1.5 million. They all have ties to these huge corporate interests. And at the end of the day, the corporate interests are what wins between both parties. I talk about the legalization of marijuana on a regular basis. And, of course, some people don't like it. Some people do. It doesn't matter to me. As long as you're honest, as long as you, deem it accurately criticize both sides, it is what it is. And you know, people have a problem with it. They're allowed to have their opinion. I'm never afraid of saying anything on Fox News that I wouldn't say on this show or on my show or any other place. And, you know, the only time I've ever gotten a bunch of death threats is when I defended Kathy Griffin for her stupid yet legal and constitutional right, her first right to satire, when she fake beheaded President Trump. But I actually thought that was a good indication of how wonderful we are as a nation, because we don't really behead our leaders. We do it satirically, which separates us from a lot of other nations.
What was the thing that really made you focus on the prison industrial complex? What was it, college? Was it personal experience? Was it living in Brooklyn for 12 years?
For me, first of all, I mean, you know, I was never a saint to a person myself. We used to do quite a bit of petty theft when I was in high school and things like that. Nothing too big, but when I was 12 years old, we started doing foster care. And so I was always very aware of the criminal justice process at that point, because foster parents, foster families are an extension of that line of work. And so that was always kind of a fascination. As soon as that kind of happened, you get to hear different people's experiences and understand, the good sides of the criminal justice process and some of the bad sides of the criminal justice process. So ever since we got into foster care when I was like 12 years old, I sort of had an interest in it. And then my heart has always gone out to those people who, maybe made a mistake and are paying for it for the rest of their lives. I have a friend who made a mistake. He got drunk and he drove, and he ended up killing someone. He's currently incarcerated for 25 years. I believe that sentence is a little bit too harsh. But nonetheless, he did make a mistake. My heart goes out to individuals who have made life decisions that they might not have wanted to make. And I think we have to remember that, you know, incarcerated people are people, and what we do in this country to those individuals, specifically when it comes to juvenile solitary confinement, is absolutely atrocious. And we have to look at this and realize that, you know, that it's, you know, they're not criminals. They're not just criminals. They're people. And, you know, some individuals are in situations that are out of their control. For example, in Chicago, which, by the way, is the 13th most dangerous city in America, not number one, despite the media, for Chicago being a fire wreck. New Orleans is worse, Detroit's worse, and so on, St. Louis, and so on. But, you know, if you're in a car and something goes wrong, your friend ends up shooting somebody, you're not charged with this murder. This was not a gun in your hands. But now you're complicit. Even if a robbery occurs, so you're doing something stupid. You're robbing a store. Okay, this is dumb. Don't do it. The stupid juvenile mistake. You run away. Something happens in that store. Well, you're three blocks away. You are still charged with whatever actions occur. If you're charged with murder or whatever, attempted murder, whatever it might be, the way that we've done it, you know, this guilt by association kind of policing, you know, it incarcerates such a wide net of people, some of whom, you know, deserve to be there. I'm not saying that there are some people that need to be in prison, and those people were always in prison. You know, we've always had laws in this country that have incarcerated individuals who are not safe to be around the public. But we have to question, you know, what's happened. Why do we have 2.5 million people in prison right now, and we had 300,000 people in prison in the 1970s? Have we gotten that much worse as a society, as human beings? No. It is because of the monetary benefit that these institutions have when it comes to incarcerating massive amounts of people. It is a huge multi-billion dollar industry, and it's predicated on human suffering, and it's absolutely abhorrent, and the American people need to wake up and do something about it.
We should end with something positive. Is there a wrestler that you and maybe some of your foster siblings bonded over when you were a 12-year-old?
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, this was some 12, what year is it? This was like 93, 94, 95. Yeah, we used to do, my foster brother Michael, who was about 23 years old, which I can't even believe. We got him when he was two. Yeah, we used to set, we always loved, you know, of course, let's see, this is before Stone Cold. Now we always loved Stone Cold.
We could do Stone Cold. That's fine.
Shawn Michaels. I'm trying to think of like in the 94. Oh, probably like, man, maybe like 94. Was it like Brutus the Barber Beefcake?
Oh, it was not a good time. It was not the heyday of anything.
That was a good time. I liked that time, but I was young though, so that time worked for me. But we used to always put my mattress on the floor. We would do a bunch of different wrestling moves. And I was probably a horrible babysitter in hindsight, but thankfully, my little brother is fully safe and not deformed in any way. But no, I mean, we always used to, you know, that was the nice thing about us as a foster family, because I was 12 and big and rambunctious, and we would take in kids, you know, that were always, or for the most part, well, not all of them, some of them were like kind of rowdy, you know, we were a media care foster home. So it was basically the cops go in, and they take the kids out, and they need a home for these kids within an hour or 2 hours, and they would send them to our place. So, you know, you never knew, you know, what was going to be, who was going to be coming through your doors and what their emotional state was going to be. Obviously, it was never, they were never thrilled because they just gone through a massive trauma. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was always fun. There was tough kids. And pro wrestling was always something that we could watch together because, you know, I always loved it, and it was relatively family friendly, although the Attitude Era got a little bit more blue, but that's okay.
One thing from one WrestleMania, this is right before, I think, the Attitude Era. It was either at the start of the Attitude Era or right before it. It was a WrestleMania. It might have been 15. So yeah, it was in the middle of it. I apologize. That little tangent there. It was the WrestleMania where Undertaker wrestles Big Boss Man. And he hangs him from the middle of the ring in front of children in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I remember that. That was awesome. I remember thinking, how the hell did they do it? And I was like, he's dead. There's no way he's going to be. There's no way he could live. I loved it.
And he didn't live for very long. He died at the age of 41. And here's a fun fact. In July 2004, he ran for commissioner chairman of Paulding County, Georgia. You are currently running for Brooklyn Borough president. You and the big boss man, very different sides of the aisle with criminal justice, but have a lot in common.
Well, I don't know. Thank you, brother. You know, it's interesting. Actually, I know a lot of people who work. Well, I don't know a lot of people. I know a couple of people who work in corrections and are members of the police department. They don't do anything great. There's massive issues with criminal justice. And at the end of the day, they're just following protocol. And if you can change that protocol, they change right along with it. So Big Boss Man might have been more open-minded. Then we give him credit for it.
You're giving the big boss man way too much credit right now.
Maybe. I don't know. Well, he did come out as a relatively militant officer towards the end of his career there. I recall that.
He looked like a private prisoner or private prison war. That's all I'm saying. people could follow you all the forms, but the most important probably is BK4BK.com. It's Ben Kissel for Brooklyn. Elections is November what?
I believe it's November 7th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can people vote?
Yeah, check it out.
Could people vote in advance
if they live in
for local elections?
No, they can't vote. I don't believe that there is any early voting for these.
That sucks.
You know, it's an uphill battle, but it's a great thing. And I highly encourage everyone to run for public office. Win, lose, it doesn't matter. If you have an idea, if you have policies you want to see put forward, if you want to change the conversation, get out there and change it, and you can change it. No matter what, again, it doesn't matter if you win or lose. As long as you get some, as long as you can express yourself. I mean, if you look at what happened with Howard Stern, for example, Howard Stern ran for governor, and he had one policy platform that actually got instituted, which was that construction should be done at night so that traffic isn't congested during the day. And the governor I forget who the governor was there at the time of New York, did that. They implemented that. They're like, that's a good idea. Why are we doing construction at rush hour? We should be doing it at 2 a.m. And so, you know, Howard Stern, obviously he dropped out of the race. He didn't win it. But he got some policy put forward. So that's the most important thing to remember. Get out there and have your voice heard. And win, lose, it doesn't matter as long as you can perhaps get the conversation going in a direction that you want it to go in.
It's a wonderful message. And above all, thanks for doing this and happy birthday.
Oh, my goodness. I can't deal with all this birthday stuff. All right, Brandon. Thank you, brother.